I'm Amy, sex educator, sex and relationship coach, and co-owner of PurePleasureShop.com.
I'm April, VP of the cutting-edge sex toy company Hot Octopus, and I dedicate my life to the business of sex.
We are on a mission to teach you how to have hot sex, deep intimacy, and how to make your own rules for who you are as a sexual being.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Revolution.
Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com.
And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Snakey number one and Snakey number two here.
Snakey.
Soon we won't be chip and dip anymore. People will be very confused.
You know what we haven't shared on the podcast yet is our little joke about it's from Juicy J, the song that's my perfect strip song.
Stripples.
Where it's like stripples in the beginning. Have we talked about that before?
I don't think so. What does it say?
What are we saying? It's bands will make her dance.
Oh, yeah.
Bands will make her dance.
She's dancing right now.
Yeah, I actually am. But in the beginning, it goes stripples. And it's like always, Amy and I always go back and forth and say that. Stripples.
Why do we love strippers so much?
I love strippers. We've been to many a strip club. Remember when we were in New Orleans?
Oh, yeah?
And we went to that strip club.
Yeah, and then you lost your phone and all your money.
I lost my phone. It was on the table, and I left it there.
And all of a sudden, it was like 6 a.m., and our life was sucked out.
And
I was like, fuck.
Amy was sponsoring my stripper habit at the time. She had all of the monies. I was like, I don't have any cash. I was on the company at the time, so it wasn't ethical to go to strip clubs on the company.
So I remember I created this category, this little like invisible box of all the things that suck your soul away, and that includes I'm not anti-strip clubs, but sometimes you go in there and all of a sudden your money's gone and all the time went by and it's 6 a.m.
And it was like, well, we went in the afternoon, Amy.
No, we didn't.
Yes,
that was at night.
No, we didn't.
It was dark when we came out.
When we came out, it was dark. When we went in, it was light because we were training a store.
Well, there's
down
no light
there,
in there. There's no
and
windows.
The strip club was right next to the store we were training.
Oh, shit.
And so what happened was, and I remember this.
Yeah.
We went in, and I was like, let's go check out the strippers. And there was no one in there because it was the middle of the day, so this one particular stripper paid a lot of attention to us. She had this, like, schoolgirl vibe, and I was like,
you were giving her a lot of attention,
oh, my God,
too?
I was like, I just gave her so much money. I was like, you don't even do anything. You just give money.
She probably took your phone, too. Just kidding.
Well, I'm not accusing anyone.
I'm not.
But
you
it was
probably
suspicious.
Just dropped it in the bathroom.
No, I left it on the table, and when I went back, they were like, we've never seen a phone.
We don't know anything about
it. And I was like, son of a bitch.
We've never seen a phone in our entire lives.
And this is when iPhones, like, were... This was a long time 2013.
Ago. Yeah. We started our work trips together for Uber Lube, and, well, that was Fun Factory at
but
the time.
But anyway, I just loved doing that strippers.
Strippers.
The Juicy J strippers.
Strippers.
Yeah.
We do love strippers.
Yeah.
We do love us some strippers. So this episode, by the way, is not about strippers. It's with Sunny Megatron. I wonder if Megatron's her real last name. It's such a fucking awesome last name.
I hope so.
I highly doubt it. But it's a really cool last name. And Sunny Megatron, we've known for years. Her podcast, which she does with her husband, co-host, and they're in an open marriage, I believe, Ken, right?
I've hung out with both of them in Chicago.
You went to a dungeon with them.
I took my first dungeon tour with them when I worked with Fun Factory back in Zide. Again, I think this was 2012. Wow, I'm really
this
reminiscing.
A lot of fun things that happened. That's when we went to Burning Man for the first and only time.
Yeah.
Oh my God, let's go back.
That's when I was marriaged. So I've hung out with both of them. They're incredibly intelligent humans, and
they're part of our podcast network too, the Pleasure Podcast Network. So their podcast is American Sex, and then she also has another podcast called Open Deeply Podcast, and she specializes in all sex ed because also she was nominated. Actually, no, she won Sexpert of the Year
2021 Sexpert of the Year, which is impressive. And she has a show on Showtime.
Yeah,
and there's also you'll hear it in the bio, but she's impressive.
But kink is really a special thing for her to speak on. She's writing a book about it called Customizable Kink, A Strategic Guide to Erotic Play, that should be out in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, we are talking a lot about that, about customizable kink, about kink BDSM in general, how to incorporate it into your lives. She's an amazing speaker. It's highly entertaining. I actually was just listening to her podcast the other day, and I don't think it's actually on this episode that she talked about the episode she just did on taboo sex with Molina, I think it's Molina Williams. Amazing I can't even call her an educator. She is beyond an educator, and she's a performer. She's all the things. Anyways, I was listening to it, and it was a combination of fucking hilarious.
Is it on the American Sex podcast?
Okay. But it's taboo sex. It's like talking about like body fluid fetishes and all these different things. But they're talking about it from this informative place and this very accepting place, and also playful, like, you know, how they call it like this, you know, a fucked up fetish thing, but like they're honoring it in a way too. So anyways, I highly recommend checking it out. American Sex Podcast. It's incredible.
They are so smart. I want to.
Does anyone have an earplug fetish?
I want to give. I am sure they do. It might not be a fetish, but you have a need. I want to give a shout out to this. I received this incredible book. It's called Earplug Erotica, and it's like the perfect, I think it's the perfect little in your bathroom.
It's adorable.
Like you just page through it. It's by Mike McCoy, and you can get it on Amazon. I'm gifting it to Amy because she has earplugs in her ears almost every time.
They're like little cute drawings of earplugs doing sexy things.
Yeah, earplugs at a house party. And then there's like having a threesome. Earplugs in camping situations. So it's called Earplug Erotica. Go check it out. It's such an adorable little gift. And earplugs at dinner and doing funny little things. And there's no text. It's all imaging.
It's adorable.
And imagery. Earplug.
You showed me that. I was like, they kind of look like dildos, but they're earplugs. They're like the foam style earplugs. Earplug Erotica. So it's like earplugs doing cute cartoony things like having sex and they're skydiving and banging.
Well,
in the
I
sky.
Sent you the picture of the earplugs walking their dogs. Because I was like, that's you and I. That's you and Paoli and Leggy and myself.
Oh, that's cute.
So
hey, I want to announce something to y'all. Last night, April was by herself and she painted a picture of her dog.
Well, I went through this whole thing where I used to paint in high school.
Yeah, it's really good.
And
you should put it on Instagram.
Really good is not.
It's really good.
That's questionable. Thank you for your support.
I think it's really good.
And anyway, I went through this whole, this thing where I was like, what used to really light me up? And I was like, I loved painting. And so I've dated a lot of artists in the past.
And musicians.
At least three. And musicians, some of which were both, which were painters. And so I used to actually paint a lot more in my 20s. This isn't that exciting, but I decided I was going to paint pictures of my dog.
What about me? Can I have one of me next time?
So humans are really difficult for me.
You can make me look crazy. It's fine.
Right. And then I also, the medium of paint I'm working with is acrylic paint. It dries fast. So you have to think of all of these things that I forgot about. And then Legend was going crazy last night because I was painting him and I'm not paying attention to him. And I was like, kept holding him up to see the painting. And he was like kind of excited about it.
I bring this up because there's two things here. Actually, there's a number of pieces here, but one is really beautiful, is finding a creative way to, like, especially for people who are feeling bored, unhappy, disconnected to their bodies.
That's
what's
happening with me. This is why I ordered a paint set, it's called the adult paint set on Amazon. It was like $60-something. It took like,
not sponsored by Amazon.
We're not. No, I'm sorry. That's just where I got it because it was a one-stop paint shop.
Yeah.
And it has everything you need for just beginning to paint.
Well, that and like, you know, and again, people think that you have to be really good at it. Sorry, dog bark. Legend's really upset that you aren't giving him attention right now. So that people think that you have to be really good at it or like to learn an instrument or something. And like, you can just, I have a ukulele at home that I barely ever play, but when I pick it up, it's actually kind of fun. I'm terrible at it, but it's fun.
If you want to learn how to paint, I'm not even kidding. Bob Ross shows.
Can they on Netflix now?
That's a documentary about Bob Ross. But I watched him every day on PBS when I was a child. And I think that's where, and my brother's such a talented artist. He can paint and draw and do all of these things. I have never felt that I was gifted with the artistic wand that my brother was. Like, my brother can sit and sketch someone and make them look exactly how they are, or make them look cartoony, or make them look like in so many different ways. And then he can paint too. And I never was able to do that. My mom can weave baskets from scratch.
You can get on a fucking microphone and talk about anything better than a lot of humans on this planet. So that's an art. It's an artist. You're an artist in your own way.
Depends on how much wine I had.
Tequila.
Tequila.
This podcast brought to you by tequila.
No, but watching Bob Ross, I'm not even kidding. That is free instructional information for people that want to learn how to paint.
The other thing, the reason why I was talking about this is also because I was talking about how April and I are crazy dog moms and we're in our late 30s and we don't have children.
Are you going to bring up this movie?
No, I just saw the trailer. Don't. Someone showed the trailer for the movie Lamb.
So I was thinking comedy, okay? Amy's like, oh, I have to show you this trailer. She comes over lady, today.
I think she loses her children. She turns this lamb into her dream child.
And she's like, I was like, wait, what was that crack sound? And Amy's like, I think she just killed the mom. I was like, what the fuck is
this? We don't know if she did, but but it has like a happy song when she's like holding the lamb's hand.
It's a Beach Boys song.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if we...
And that's you and I with our dogs.
Oh my God.
Cuckoo. All right, anyways.
She swaddles the lamb, the baby lamb.
God. Oh, so earlier before we started this podcast, you were telling me a story about your bait session last night. So. And then I was like, save it for the fucking microphone because I think the audience should always hear about your baiting session.
So this is important because I when I get into my baiting mode.
Masturbating.
We're talking about masturbating. and my toys are my go-to and my magic wand died right in the middle of my session.
And not defective, it's just rechargeable,
it's
right?
It's rechargeable, yeah. But I think maybe I just use it too much. I was so pumped because I had the Femme Fun, their wand.
It's the like Ultra Wand.
The Ultra Wand, and it's tinier. And I was like, well, is this going to work? And I'm like, is it going to be powerful enough? And it blew my mind because it did the job almost faster than I expected.
That's amazing. Because it really is. You would think that the bigger, the more power, which actually, I mean, still, I'm sure the magic wand is more powerful, but that the smaller thing that we've done a lot of work with Femme Fun before. Like, we love their brand. And I actually have one too, which I don't really, it's not usually my go-to as well. I have their Ultra Bullet.
I love that one.
And I've had this similar magical experiences where, because it's not my go-to, and we know our brain is the largest sex organ. My brain's like, oh, use the one that you're used to. But then when I use this other one, I'm like, holy shit, this thing totally gets me there. It's amazing.
Well, I might change up from using the magic wand, and I'm sorry, probably just the smaller, I like how the Femme Fun wand is smaller because sometimes that the baseball bat, remember I used to call it the baseball bat?
Yeah, the nemesis.
It gets in the way, and I was really impressed with just the feeling, the sensation, even in comparison, direct comparison from one to the other. And I love Femme Fun. You're right.
Variety is good too. I mean, you could use the baseball bat magic wand one day and then use the Femme, and then that's helping your brain not get stuck on the thing. So for me, I'll do that. You know, I'll use my, I often use like the Satisfier, the suction toys, but I can also go to the Femme Fun's Ultra Bullet too and just have some variety in
my life.
This
is tools in your toolkit when you're a carpenter. And I've made this comparison. If you don't have the right tool to fix your house or things that get broken in your house, which has happened to me where I'm like, God damn, where's that wrench? It's the same for sex toys. It's like having a sex toy toolbox.
Well, and you also don't usually have one tool. Right, you have multiple tools there for different jobs or different moods, we could say, or like you said, your rechargeable dies. And so Femme Fun, if you're all wondering about this, is FEMME. So it's Femme Fun. We're talking about the Ultra Wand and the Ultra Bullet. You can find them both at Pure Pleasure's website. That's my mom's and my own sex website, sex toy website. It's not a sex website. You can see April naked on there. Just kidding.
No, you can't.
So go to purepleasureshop.com. Use coupon code shamelesssex. You get 15% off. You can try these, and you and April can bait at the same time
from
afar.
Support Janice, our biggest podcast fan. She's been the biggest fan since
she probably listens to the episode when it drops, like before anyone. The minute it drops, she's like, or she'll message me at the end of a Tuesday, like, where's the episode at?
Or she's like, April said fuck too many times. I'm like, sorry, mom. Fuck.
All right, you ready for a fucking sex question?
Fuck yeah.
All right, here the fuck we go. I've been with my fucking husband. Just
oh, no. All right. Janice's earmuffs are up now.
Sorry, mom. Oh, okay. Anyways, I'm trying to regroup here. I've been with my husband for 11 years now, and the sex life has been mediocre. It's recently gotten better, but he doesn't perform oral on me very often. Almost every time we're intimate, I do with him. She gives him oral. It's gotten to the point I've been thinking about satisfying my sexual needs outside of my marriage. I've talked to my husband about this several times, and he just doesn't get it. My question is, if I'm not sexually satisfied in my marriage, does seeking outside of it justify my infidelity? Big question.
Wow, this is heavy,
common.
That I was just going to say that this is heavy and it's common. It's common to, especially if you've been together for a long time, and we talk about long-term relationships so frequently and keeping the sex spicy and the work involved. And it was like, oh, fucking work. It's work. I don't want to do it. And the thing is, I have friends that this question could be written bi.
Totally.
And it's normal.
I would say that I personally have been in a place where I could have written this question. I haven't been married, but I've been in relationships. And it wasn't just like I'm not satisfied in the sex, but there's some way that I wasn't feeling met in a major way. And I was speaking for it and they still weren't meeting it. And so then I actually did have some sexual experiences, like, you know, 3 or 4 hour snuggles with makeouts with someone while I was in a committed relationship with a partner who also had been cheating on me for a year, but I didn't know about it. But anyways,
I remember that. That's when you disappeared from the hotel. And I was like, where the fuck is Amy?
And I justified it. I justified it by saying, you know, I've been asking for them to meet me, to show up more. Again, it wasn't sex. It's literally just to show up for me, like being in connection with me and saying that we have a problem here and they still aren't doing it. They're just like off in their own world. And so then I justified it. And I think the justification system is very strong. And I am not going to talk too much shit about the justification system because I think it serves a purpose, but it can trick us. And here's the thing. Totally, you could justify it and say, oh, this is fine because I'm not receiving this. But is that your higher self? Like, are you going to feel really good about that? Does that leave you feeling good at the end of the day? I think that the justification system can get in the way of us living as our highest self and being in integrity. And in integrity is with our word, with our actions. So you could totally do this. We're not going to shame you if you do this. We are not pro-infidelity either. We're neutral. But I think that there's better ways. So like one of my things is you've talked to your partner, your husband, several times. What have you really said though? And I'm not hating on you. I'm just curious what that conversation has sounded like. Is it just, hey, I'd just really like if you could go down on me a little more, and then they don't do it. What if you actually like, hey, I need to sit down and talk to you about something really important. We've been married for 11 years and you do go down on me on the occasion, and I've been craving a lot more of it. And my perception, my story is that I offer oral sex to you often. And I'm not receiving often. And this is something that I'm really, really craving. And this is serious. Are you willing to work with me?
I think so. I am not pro infidelity or pro being out of integrity in relationships. I have been there, and it doesn't feel good. It actually almost hurts the person that's doing the lying, right? Mm-hmm. It's lying. That's what infidelity is.
Everyone could be hurt involved in it.
Well, yes. Yeah. And I'm just saying, you've been with this person for 11 years. You obviously, the sex life is mediocre, and that's very important to you. And you want him to go down on you because he doesn't do that very often, and you do. And you also, I want to point out that you said it has gotten better. And asking for the oral, as Amy was stating, I think is really important. And what about talking to him about getting the needs met in your relationship outside of the marriage sexually, but what about including him?
Yeah.
Maybe because that could
in the
be
choice you mean
or,
to do it.
Or
yeah.
Maybe experiencing a threesome. When I had
have someone else eating your box because your partner won't?
Or even, well, not maybe a piece of it, but there could be a turn on that happens, or having sex at a sex party, this consensual sex party with other couples having sex, where maybe it will like ignite something within you, and maybe the him visualizing and seeing other people going down or doing oral, or maybe he's not comfortable with doing oral.
I like that, but people are like, you know, I hint at it, or like, I'm not into like just planting seeds. I'm into like, speak about what you want, how important it is. And if it's not that important, then maybe you don't speak to it. But this is obviously important. You're thinking about having sex with someone else. And so why not advocate for the importance? And if your partner still is like, yeah, I don't really like licking box, or it's not really my thing, or yeah, I'll do it, and then they don't do it, then your next conversation is, hey, I had a conversation with you about how important this is. Obviously, we're not meeting each other. Let's talk about ways we can get met outside. And then you have that conversation. Sex right. parties, maybe open relationships.
And the answer might be no, no, no.
So then you reassess the relationship.
I will be totally honest with you. I have a friend that is experiencing something very similar to this, and everything is really great in their partnership besides the sex and the needs. She's not getting her needs met, and she hasn't for years, but there's so much love and other pieces there. And I've asked her this question, and it comes down to the answer's been no. And it's a hard fucking choice, because what do? Masturbate? Well, that's an option if you don't want to leave. But I mean, infidelity, if you choose it, just know it's a rocky road, and there's a lot that comes with that as well, meaning the covering up, the lies, that circle more lies. So you just have to be, if you're going to cheat, conversate beforehand as much as you can before you make the decision. But ultimately, just know that possibility of being caught. And if that happens, then everything could erode away and you might not have this person in your life at all moving forward.
Or you're like April 9, you don't get caught, you actually just out it someday. So this happened a while ago and now I have to deal with that shit. So yeah, totally. So not judging anyone here. And again, you know, there's a lot of options here, but that, you know, there, it sounds like there's a lot. How many of our sex questions is the answer not more conversations about it? So
I know, and that's such a pain in the ass. And I wish there was just a light switch.
Just press a button, take a little green pill and you'll be just fine. And not fully related to this, but we're just talking about pleasure here for the pussy here. And no, OMGS has yet to do an oral season, but it's all about hands-on techniques. We talk about OMGS 5 million times in our podcast. That's my lucky number, 5 million. It's a big number. Most people are like 2. Anyway, so what is OMGS? OMGS.com. It's an online program with multiple seasons where you can learn about sexual pleasure. And it has tasteful videos and modules that actually show you techniques. Season 1 is all about external pleasure, so hands on vulvas. Season 2 is all about internal pleasure with vulvas. Season 3 soon will be about sex toys for vulvas. I believe that someday they'll be doing a penis season, and maybe we'll do an oral sex season someday. Well, OMGS, what do you think?
I mean, I'm sure they might. It's all research based, which I love. And you pay one time, it's not subscription based, one time, and you get access to either one of the seasons or both. You can buy the two for one. And you do get 10% off. So go to omgs.com/shameless and you can access either or both of those seasons. You won't regret it. There's a lot of really great tools for that sexy tool belt.
And I actually, coming back to that sex question, you want the oral sex. Is your partner using their hands on you? Is it feeling really good? What if they are not into putting their mouth in your vulva and they just need to learn some new hands on, you know, really well lubricated, lots of uber lube hands on your vulva? And maybe if they don't have any tips or techniques, they could watch OMGS and learn. So, because not everyone is into mouth and genitals. You didn't want jizz in your mouth for most of your life until recently.
This is true. And I also didn't give blowjobs very often.
There you go. Everyone's different.
To very many partners.
Yeah.
And that was my stuff. And even when they asked for it, it almost made me not want to do it.
Yeah.
Because, not because I didn't want to please them, because I was like, why is that so important to you?
Yeah.
Right. I wasn't doing any work then. Meaning I wasn't doing any work on myself.
Oh.
I was just like, oh, it's your stuff.
I was like, what kind of work are you talking about? Yeah, got it. Yeah.
I've been working out all night long.
Yeah. Well, then you're like, oh, wait, actually. Yeah. And again, did your partners say, this is important to me? I really want to get my dick sucked by you.
No. For the most part, they just accepted it and moved on.
And then maybe had some affairs.
Maybe.
I don't know the answer to that.
You know what?
I'm planting seeds over here.
God damn it. Are you ready for a bio?
Yeah, let's dive in.
Planting seeds. All right. Sunny Megatron is an award-winning certified sexuality educator, certified relationship coach, and media personality. She's the host and executive producer of the Showtime original television series Sex with Sunny Megatron. Plus, she co-hosts the award-winning American Sex podcast and Open Deeply podcast. Voted the 2021 Sexpert of the Year, her work focuses on normalizing alternative sexual practices and ending sexual stigma. To learn more, visit sunnymegatron.com. But first, have you ever been just too damn high? I know I have. With today's weed, sometimes it's a dangerous game. That's why I'm a huge fan of dadgrass. Dadgrass is legal, organic, smokable hemp that is very low in THC and high in CBD, relaxing your body and mellowing your mind so you can chill the F out without the stony stress. I love dadgrass, whether I'm working on a big project and have to focus, need help calming down after a stressful day, or even when I want to smoke a little something before, during, or after some sexy time with myself or my lover.
Ooh, you wild. While dadgrass is for folks of all genders and bits, they also offer momgrass CBG joints for a more energized vibe. Whether you're looking for a new buzz or a chill way to enjoy an old favorite, dadgrass has something for you. Dadgrass keeps it easy peasy as all their products are federally legal for ages 21 and over, and it ships right to your door anywhere in the U.S. And right now, Dadgrass is offering our listeners 20% off your first order when you go to dadgrass.com/shameless. Go to dadgrass.com/shameless for 20% off your first order. That's dadgrass.com/shameless. Go get your buzz on without getting floored. All right, it's showtime. All right, everyone, it is interview time. And this interview is with Sunny Megatron, who is an awesome human for many reasons. But one very special one is we're in the same podcast family. Yes. Pleasure Podcast. Yeah. Thank you, Cam.
Are we cousins? Are we aunts and uncles together?
Are you my Tia?
Are we sisters, brothers?
I guess. Yeah, I could be your TT, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Can you be
my
TT? Yeah,
okay.
Cool. So this is our TT, Sunny Megatron. And Sunny has been in the, I like to say the human sexuality field for a long time. And you probably heard some things in the bio. And we will ask this very first question, which is actually not a question. It's a prompt, Sunny. Ooh. Can you please tell our listeners how you got to where you are today in the field of sexuality, maybe in your personal life and podcasts and the business realm,
yes,
too? Ooh.
Yes. This is like, it's a long story, but I'll keep it to the basics. This is my second career. I worked for a top ad agency for 17 years. I was like, you know, the business lady and yada, yada. And it was my own personal journey to discover kink in my mid-30s. I realized, you know, something was missing, very repressed sex life, romantic life, bordering on abusive, like a lot of shit. And went on my own personal journey and was just blown away at everything I was discovering. And I was like, I have to tell everybody. So hence the, recession of 2008.
Oh, yeah.
I was laid off from my fancy ass job. And I was like, you know what? This is my job now. So now I'm a certified sex educator, relationship coach, kink educator, the whole shebang. Podcaster, TV show. Like, yeah. I kind of can't believe it.
And you have a book coming out.
Yes. Yes.
Exciting.
You've been wildly successful. And I'm so happy that you're on our show because I'm like, yay, I love Sunny in all your. And I met you back when I worked at Fun Factory.
Yeah.
And we went on a dungeon, my first dungeon tour with
your
first? You and Ken. That was my first dungeon tour. This was
in Chicago?
It was in Chicago. It was in
the studio.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was so cool. And I got to see all sorts of shit. It was so cool. And you both were the best hosts. And we went out and had some drinks and we had so much fun. And
yes,
that's how I think that might have been in 2013.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah.
Probably. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was like 2012, 2013,
it might have been
like
2012.
That. Yeah.
But I've known and loved you and your work since then, and you have just done so much. I mean, you had a show on Showtime, right? Showtime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still like, what? How did that? What? Did that happen?
Yeah. I was like, I know her. I was like, I know her.
I
it was awesome. I'm like,
her.
I totally know her. You've been on the cover of some magazines. No big deal, everyone. It's just Sunny Megatron.
No big deal. Hey. No big deal.
Well, obviously, this was the path that was chosen for you for a reason, and you're crushing. So this episode, because you aren't quite an expert, is about BDSM kink. So what is your personal definition, explanation of kink / the BDSM?
Ooh, okay. So, you know, a lot of folks, they hear, you know, bondage and discipline, dominance and submission and sadomasochism. That's what BDSM means. And I really love kink educator Midori.
Her
short definition is childlike play with adult sexual privilege and better toys.
Mm.
And that's sort of the vibe that I embody of kink. It's more of a creative, erotic mindset that does not have to include sex, which a lot of people, you know, they hear kink, they think sex. And I usually frame it like, just like when you're, you know, doing kink, you could choose to use a flogger. You could choose to use a paddle. None of those are required, but they're among the tools you can choose from. Sex is just like a flogger. You can use it or you can leave it and use other things. It can be all in the mind. So one of the ways I describe kink is with an analogy. And in this analogy, let's say I'm a dominant And I am going to plan a scene with you. You know, we're going to have a kinky encounter. And so instead of me being a dominant, I'm actually a roller coaster engineer. And I'm going to design a roller coaster for you. And in this kinky roller coaster, I'm going to use different emotional states and even emotional smoke and mirrors. I might do that strictly with talking. We can do that completely psychologically. I might do that through sensory input, you know, flogging, spanking, whatever it is. The choice is mine based on what you tell me. So when I say, okay, I'm the roller coaster engineer, what do you like? And you sit down, and you tell me, you know, okay, I love corkscrew turns and I like the, you know, the long steep dive, you know, when you go down the hill, but I hate the water splashes. I hate the dark tunnels. So that's our negotiation. And it's my job as this roller coaster engineer to take all of the specs that you've given me, all of the yeses and all of the nos, and arrange them in a way that to you feels like a surprise. When I'm talking about, I'm using that those emotional highs and lows and ups and downs. And even though we've thoroughly negotiated, you completely trust me, I will never do one of the things that you said, I don't like those corkscrew turns or whatever. Emotionally, while I'm taking you through your roller coaster or your scene, I want you to feel at points like, maybe this roller coaster is a runaway car. Maybe it's not going to follow the track. Maybe it's just going to go flying through the theme park. I'm not sure. I want to suspend your reality. I want to like get you into that place where you're not sure what's happening. That, to me, is a good kink scene. And just like a roller coaster, at the end, I'm going to gently pull you into the station. I'm going to take your hand because I know you're dizzy when you get out of the car. And that's our aftercare. So that's really what kink is to me. It's an emotional and or sensory experience that may or may not involve sex. Mm-hmm. It's play.
I love that. It's like mic drops. The podcast is over, everyone. Everyone's like, I either want to go to the dungeon or the amusement park, but I want to go with Sunny. And Sunny's going to take me there.
I want the loops, those crazy ass loops.
I do. I do so well with analogies in terms of the way that I'm kind of envisioning that. And I think that that's really wonderful and beautiful and clear. And we love Midori. She's been on our podcast multiple times. Yeah. She's incredible, incredible human. And I like the engineer idea. And so, which brings me to this next question, because you just defined it as something very broad, and same with Midori's definition, and we have these kind of narrow ideas. And so what in your opinion are a lot of the, because there's all these rules, like why are there these rules, these one-way-isms of how people should do kink, and why do you think they're BS? Like, why are they here, and why are they complete bullshit?
This is like the reason for my existence as a kink educator, and the reason I'm writing my book. My book is called Customizable Kink, A Strategic Guide to Erotic Play. And I chose those words very carefully because I wholeheartedly do believe that kink is customizable. And I say that all the time. And when I say that, what I mean is all of those rules we hear, like if you're a submissive, you need to act this way. If you're dominant, you must act this way. If you're doing such and such a type of spanking scene, you have to do it just like that. I can say shit. Yeah,
bullshit.
Yes. there is only one written in stone across the board must adhere to rule in kink, and that is consent. Mm-hmm. You have to do it with consent. But even how you go about establishing and maintaining consent, that's even customizable. There are best practices. There are ideas. But how you choose to do your kink, to establish your consent, is up to you to suit your needs. And when I say a strategic guide, strategic to me is all of the brain stuff we need to do kink. And usually when we go online and we look for kink classes, or we're going to our local dungeon or sex positive store, we're usually learning the technical skills I call execution, you know, how to spank, how to stick needles in people, how to whatever it is. And those things usually have very clear cut, like there are 10 steps to tie your first basic, you know, Japanese rope bondage harness or something. But the strategic skills, those are more murky. Those are the human skills. Those are the skills that require emotional intelligence, integrity, empathy, vulnerability. And without those, you could tie a gazillion knots and spank a gazillion asses. But if you don't have that human connection and that mutual respect and ethics between the partners you're playing with, none of those technical skills are any good. So in kink education, and that, you know, that's what I call the strategy or the soft skills, they're called. And in kink education, we see an overemphasis on those hard technical skills and an underemphasis on the strategic soft skills, which kind of mirrors real life. Right? Like, this is why we're all in therapy and reading all of these books about, you know, nonviolent communication and emotional literacy, right? So really, kink is mirroring the bigger world.
I think of like the people that write the life hacks things, or not right, but they
BuzzFeed.
Yeah, BuzzFeed
like
life
10
hacks.
Ways to,
or
right.
The podcast or the game or things like that that are all about like, if you do X, Y, and Z, then you'll get to this place. And that just totally discredits the fact that everyone is so different. Every moment is so different. And it's giving people this kind of simple blueprint, but yeah, like it's way more complex than that.
Yeah.
And why is it though that the soft sides, the strategic portions of this world, I'll call it, why is it underemphasized and why isn't it more of a vital piece of this, of the kink world?
There's a number of reasons. Yeah, there's a number of reasons. One is like, if you look at the mainstream influence and you look at what's on TV, and it's showing somebody doing, very emotionally vulnerable negotiation isn't sexy and flashy for TV. We want sexy, flashy sound bites. And in life, you know, in our real life interactions, we kind of want that too. We want the sexy, flashy sound bites. We want the 10 easy steps to blah, 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 mastering, blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't work that way. And then when we look at the kink community itself, there's lots of reasons and lots of history as to why the kink community has all these rules. I get into that in my book. Like, there's sociology, there's kink. There is lots. There's just you wait. But there are certain things if you're a newbie and you get into the kink community and you finally gotten to the point where, oh, all of the stuff that mainstream is telling me about kink, you know, 50 Shades of Grey and all that stuff. Oh, I understand. That's not the true way. And now that I found the kinksters online or in my local community, they're telling me the true way. I know. And then after a little while, you go, oh, wait, that's bullshit too. Wait a minute. The people But why is it bullshit? It's not because, you know, the kink community is trying to pull one over on you. Part of it's tradition. You know, we've always done something X, Y, Z way. We don't want to change. If you look at sex positivity in general, the last 10, 5, 20 years, we've come leaps and bounds understanding gender and understanding relationships and understanding sexuality. And if you look at the kink community, we still uphold the same traditions and expectations in our dynamics as we did in the 90s. Huh. We haven't really changed much. So one of the, I'll give you an example. If you go into the kink community, one of the like the big rules, the submissive has 100% of the control. The submissive holds all the power. Hmm. And that on the surface sounds like, well, yes, of course. That can actually be a dangerous way of thinking that people don't really realize. And I'll explain to you why. And usually when I'm breaking apart these like one true way-isms, I break down like, well, why did people say that? What purpose did it serve at the time when people started saying that? And then how doesn't it work now? How does it do a disservice and how can we reframe it? So the submissive holds all the power, we've been saying for decades, because way back when nobody knew about consent and submissives were really getting taken advantage of, they still do, by the way, but it was even more of a problem. Making that rule was a way to keep submissive safe, was a way to tell you, if you're submissive, you still have autonomy. Hmm. You know, and that was a good thing. But now when we look at that rule, we go, okay, the submissive holds all the power. So does that mean if I'm a dominant and I'm doing a scene with you and maybe you're triggered and you can't safe word and I keep going way past the line and I go, but you have all the power. You could have safe worded. You didn't. So I kept going. It also gives the message that people who are on the dominant end of things don't have any power in a scene over their own autonomy. Like, as a dominant, if I'm feeling like something's going funky, I can safe word. But a lot of dominants, like, I have to keep going, even though maybe I'm getting triggered enacting this scene. That can happen. So really, you know, how do we reframe that? Maybe the submissive has all the power over their own autonomy. You know, it's been misinterpreted as the submissive has all the control in the scene. So if something goes wrong, it's the submissive's fault. And that's dangerous thinking. So, like, that's one example of a one true wayism you hear all the time in the kink community that really, you know, does a disservice from a strategic sense. And the kink community is full of stuff like that.
I feel like there's so many, even so, that's within the kink community. So just looking from the outside perspective of the kink community. So folks who are not in it have a lot of judgments and stereotypes, and folks who are in it, there's also probably a lot of dangerous and misleading ideas and stereotypes. What are some of the other ones that you can think of that people might be buying into, whether in the community or on the outside?
Let's see. There is the submissive has all the power. You know, another one that comes up sometimes is, you know, you must always do aftercare and you must do it this certain way. Again, sure, if that's what works for you, awesome. But sometimes somebody's aftercare is like, an aftercare after a scene, for those listening, is just, you know, you've gone to this emotional state, that emotional roller coaster, and you're kind of floaty and high and in an altered state of consciousness. So the aftercare is supposed to be any kind of comfort or care that kind of helps acclimate you back to the real world and bring you down from that high. And for some people, a lot of people, their aftercare is like a warm blanket, cuddles, like, oh, you did such a good job. Maybe your partner's telling you they love you. You have a nice snack. But for some people, they don't feel good unless they're completely left alone. Like, I just need to process by myself. I need to be. And that's okay. As long as you negotiate that with your partners ahead of time, everyone's cool with what everybody needs. But oftentimes we have people like, no, you must take this blanket. I made you soup. I mean, you know?
It's violent.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So really, when it comes to a lot of the personal choices and behaviors, you see a lot of rules attached to them in kink, but really the rule is up to you.
And there's also one from the, like, outside perspective of non-kinky people that that they must have trauma. I've heard that from a lot of folks, that you have a fetish or you're kinky, whether it's you have a rape fetish or you're dominant or submissive or you get off to latex or you know, whatever your jam is, that you must have had some terrible experience that happened to you in the past, and that's why it makes you a kinky or a fetish or in this realm. I mean, what do you have to say about that? I have an idea what your answer is to that.
My answer is no. My answer is there are all sorts of different reasons people do kink. And when we pathologize that, we make it like something must be wrong with you. So, okay, listener, how many of you out there watch Dr. Pimple Popper? That's pretty gross and weird if you think about it.
I can't handle it.
Right. Am I going to be like, something happened to you as a child?
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? We all have different preferences. Sometimes we like really weird stuff, even outside of kink. And that's okay. And we can like it for different reasons. Maybe there are some people who their trauma is closely tied to their kink. Cool. There's a ton of people. That's not the case. There's a ton of people where it's play. There's a ton of people where they like the chemical cocktail that happens, you know, the endorphins and neurotransmitters, that sort of thing. There are some people that do it for chronic pain purposes. Like, I'm a dominant, but I love to receive flogging because I have chronic pain in my muscles, in my tissue, and that helps. There are some people that like to receive very intense pain because that feels that they feel that it actually rewires how their brain body responds to pain, even temporarily. I'll talk to some folks who will do like a very painful, you know, needle play scene where they're being pierced, or like the hook suspensions where people are, you know, hanging by their flesh. And they'll say, yeah, my chronic pain that I live with every day went away for like 5 or 6 weeks after I did that. And we're not really sure why, you know, and I'm not going to say, well, this definitely happens and this is the science behind it. But I've heard that, you know, it's so many people's personal experiences, whether there's a scientific reason behind it or not, or it's such a strong damn placebo effect that they really believe it. Does it matter? It's making them happier people. You know, there are other folks that do it as, you know, a lot of talk right now these days about regulating our nervous system and somatic therapy and that sort of thing. There are some people that do kink because of that. There are some people that do kink for the same reason they play Dungeons and Dragons or do improv. It's fun. So, you know, there's an infinite number of reasons people can do kink. And by saying it's all because of trauma does us all a disservice.
Okay, time for a quick break. This podcast was made possible by Uberlube. It's a luxurious silicone lubricant that enhances sex and intimacy. We receive emails from listeners who have tried Uberlube, and the feedback is unanimous. We never knew lube could be this good. It's also less likely to throw off the pH than most other lubes, and there are thousands of doctors recommending Uberlube to their patients, whether they want to make their hot sex even hotter or for folks experiencing dryness.
Uberlube is without a doubt my favorite lube. It has no flavor, no scent, and feels absolutely amazing on my body. And it isn't just for sex. I use it to tame my hair frizzies, to prevent chafing, and I even put some in my mouth before an oral sex session. Totally ups my blowjob game. Oh, and the bottle, it's beautiful. It looks like a cosmetic product. So I just leave it out on my nightstand, totally shamelessly. To learn why we think it's the best lube on the planet, check out uberlube.com and use code SHAMELESSSEX for 10% off, plus free shipping. Again, that's uberlube.com and use code SHAMELESSSEX for 10% off and free shipping.
This podcast is free to listen to because of another one of our amazing sponsors, Like a Kitten. Romantic nights with your lover are one of our favorite recipes for maintaining a healthy sex life, but it can be challenging to find all the right ingredients. This is why we love the Build Your Own Box from Like a Kitten. They will ship you a gift box with all of your erotic essentials, from vibrators and massage oils, to robes and handcuffs, to lingerie and games. The BYOB lets you choose one item from each of their 6 sexy categories, and within each category, you have 8 or more choices, so your box is completely customized to your desires.
And what's really amazing is that it's only $69. Some of the vibrators alone retail for much more than that. This box is a total steal and has every ingredient you need to make that recipe for your romantic night unforgettable. And right now, Like a Kitten is offering our listeners 20% off and free shipping when you go to likeakitten.com/shameless or enter code shameless at checkout. Just go to likeakitten.com/shameless or use code shameless to get 20% off these incredible boxes. likeakitten.com/shameless. The link is in the episode's description. Go get it right meow. And now back to the show. Did you have something you wanted to ask?
No, I just love the way that that you turned that also into like a fun, playful version of all these.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of like the pimple popper, but all these different different ways. And yeah, I think we just get kind of set in these ideas that, you know, if there's something, and again, the people that would say it comes from trauma are saying, they're saying it's a bad thing. It's a negative thing. You must, you know, if you like pain, that means it's a bad thing. But I mean, in my experience, pain and pleasure, there's a strong overlap there, and in a lot of ways. And I remember doing my sex education certification training with FISI in 2008, and heard the term pain slut as a very, very different experience from being a sub. And you know, there's a difference between people who really truly enjoy or a masochist, or you know, there's different experiences of someone who might like experiencing pain as something that, like you're saying, which and then that way they weren't saying that a healing modality, you know, and not just I've heard of it as more like a release things, but that it could literally heal, whether you're like you said, placebo, who the fuck cares,
right?
It's helping people in that way as well. I mean, that to me was somewhat new.
I think in the mainstream, how it's portrayed, though, a lot of times. So if folks are listening and they have no experience in the kink community, they go and I could be guilty of this before I was in the sex education realm, before I was more engulfed in folks that were educating me on what BDSM was and kink. But they think of these like really the dungeons and like someone's like against their will and or being suspended with the piercings, the body suspension. They're thinking of it as this almost, but the consent piece is where it comes in. These people are consenting to that. There's aftercare if they want it. So I want to speak to those folks, or I want you to help us speak to those folks, because this can be fun. Kink can be fun.
Oh, yeah.
So thinking about kink in terms of new people, or maybe someone with a little bit of experience that isn't just thinking about some 50 Shades of Grey bullshit, right? They're like, oh, I maybe have some experience. I've been handcuffed once or twice. So speaking to those curious kink folks, what are some top tips for bringing kink into their lives? And we can talk to singles and to couples, mm-hmm. partnered mm-hmm. or not.
Well, I want to break that stereotype that kink is like dark, you know, mean, leather, black, dungeons. That's one archetype. Think about like different types of people and different aesthetics, right? That's like saying all people are goth. They all dress in black. They all listen to Bauhaus. They all, you know, and it's like, sure, that's one type of person. And that's totally valid and that's cool. But you could be like a soccer mom. You could be, you know, one of those people that wears like the Pikachu onesies every day. And you know what I'm saying? So kink can have many aesthetics like that too. And not just visual aesthetics, but the mood. Like I do clown play. I dress as a clown. In one respect, I'm very sadistic, both mentally and physically, but I do it while I'm laughing. It's silly. It's ridiculous. It's almost like a comedic practical joke, like some of my scenes. And I enjoy the juxtaposition of something that's like seems really terrible, like I'm hurting you or I'm like fucking with your head, but then it's also ridiculous at the same time. I embrace the ridiculousness. So really, that one archetype we see of kink that we think is everything is just one. You can make it whatever you want. Just like you could dress however you want. You can have whatever aesthetic, you know, in life, same thing. And you don't have to do it with a romantic partner. You can, there's solo kink. Obviously most solo kink is gonna be more on the sensory end of things, but there are people that self-collaring, for instance, like a lot of people will look at wearing a collar in the kink community. And this is another one. People are like collars are like wedding rings and they're very serious. But if a collar to you is like that, cool. But sometimes a collar to people is just like, it's cute. It doesn't mean any, I just put on when I play because it's cute. And so that's another one true way is when people are like, you are besmirching the tradition of the collar. How dare you? This is a wedding ring. You need to take it seriously. And I don't know why I turned into Ethel Merman. But
I love that.
So some people will self-collar, and because they're like, you know what? I want to layer a little bit of discipline in my own life. I want to honor myself, and they can do that. You know, self-collar. They don't need a partner. You can do all sorts of sensory play by yourself. I am all for normalizing platonic play. Oh, so much. You know, it's like I'll see people who, yeah, I'm getting into kink, and I bought this flogger or I bought this violet wand, but I don't have a partner to play with, and they're excited. You know, they're new to kink. And so maybe, you know, when you're new to something and you have that frenzy and it clouds all of the red flags that are waving in front of your face. And you know, I'm not saying that anyone who gets into a situation with a new partner, it's never their fault. But when you're excited, you can miss things. And there are predators in the kink community, just like there's predators on any dating website. We're not a utopia. We're all human. A lot of humans are assholes, no matter what group you belong to, right?
Totally.
So for those folks, I would love to normalize, like have one of your friends over, you know, get some wine like you'd hang out on a Friday night, watch some movies and just chit chat. Maybe get out the flogger and play with it. It doesn't have to be sexual. But that can satisfy some of the, I'm curious and I want to experiment and I want to feel the sensory feelings. Maybe I don't want to fuck my friends, but you don't have to. I want to normalize that because kink is a lot more than sex. And I don't want to say that for everyone, because for some people, their kink is sex. And I'm not going to invalidate that. Like, we're all different. But a lot of people think it's supposed to be about sex and they pigeonhole themselves into like the sex only kink. When if they had permission to go, oh, it could be all these other things too, that they would embrace that if they knew that they could.
I love that. And I'm curious, and this is just, well, that's not a tangent, because it's related to what you're saying. What are your thoughts about, so if someone wants to give, I want to flog someone, I want to use a violent wand on someone, I want to, you do needle play in them. What are your thoughts on
sounding,
all the things, urethral sounding. What are your thoughts though that, that wouldn't apply to urethral sounding, because what if I don't have a cock, but on them needing, or not needing, but the importance of them experiencing on their own bodies as part of education so that they know what they're giving to someone like that. Like, is, do you think that that's important for them to experience and it would help them in some way?
In some ways, yes. There's like a couple layers to this. Is one, when it comes to more of the riskier things, like nothing that's done in kink is safe. You know, even flogging, even though it seems, you know, but especially something like urethral sounding can, if you're not, you know, things aren't sterile, you don't have proper procedure, it could be dangerous. So for those things, I always recommend that people seek out some kind of class, some kind of, you know, they get properly trained in this stuff. And now with the pandemic, you can do a lot of that online, whether it's a live class, whether it's like a repository like Kink Academy, where it's on-demand videos, that sort of thing. And but there is something to be said for experiencing what these things feel like, even if you're going to be the top or the giver. So you know what you're doing to other people. However, I'll come across another one true wayism. A lot of folks in the kink community, and this is kind of old school thinking, but you still hear it. Well, in order to be a good dominant, you need to work yourself up from the bottom and be a submissive first. And so you can earn your place being a dominant. And I get where that comes from. Like, the intent in a lot of these one true wayisms is for good reasons, but they kind of go sideways, you know. One, that used to, way back in the day, be more of a standard tradition. Two, there is some stock in saying, okay, it's a good idea to know how your toys feel so you can use them on other people. However, saying that, okay, you must actually be a submissive and do these scenes. And if I'm not a masochist and I am doing this like heavy duty scene where I am being like, you know, beat to all get out, I am not going to have the same experience mentally or physically as somebody who's like, I'm a masochist in my bones. It's in my blood. I love that pain. I love that. So, okay, yeah, you know, having a few swats of seeing how it feels is one thing, but like, you must be a, no. Unless that works, like for some people, they're like, you know, I actually learn better that way and I'm a little switchy. I want to do that. Cool. Kink is customizable. If that works for you, do it. Just don't, you know, say everybody has to do it your way.
And message of that, we're not over, the podcast isn't over, but education and some sort, you know, whether it's your body experiencing it, working with someone like you, reading your book, or not just your book, but there's so many educators and so many different avenues out there. And so this other question that I had too, which I'm just going to steal because I want to ask this too, because I have some clients this might refer to, but so you said in the beginning of the podcast, you were 30s that you started. Really came out in kink. So I'm going to tie it to this question because I feel like in the kink world, a lot of younger folks aren't either coming out or embracing their kinkier fetish selves. And it's coming out in 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Out of shame or...
Exactly. Yeah. So like there's shame. And so I'm curious what your advice to those people who have kinks or fetishes and they feel like it's not safe. And of all ages, it's not safe to share this with partners, or maybe I'll never find a partner who will accept me as this, you know, as this big part of me. What is your advice to those people?
First of all, you will. I mean, there is, what is it, like a shoe for every foot or whatever. There, and I was the same way. I had these fantasies. I didn't know a kink community existed. I had no idea. And then when I stumbled upon it, I was like, it was very serious. Like, you're all dark in the dungeon yelling. Blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not my vibe either. And then I found the clowns. And I was like, oh, my people, you exist. So whatever you're into, there are people out there that are into it. It's a matter of finding them. And when it comes to kink, I always say the first partner you negotiate with is yourself. The first, you know, any kind of real personal understanding, you have to understand yourself first. And think about just the stages of development and kind of where all of us are. Where are you at, you know, mentally in your 20s, or just the generic you, all of us? Where are we at in our 20s versus where are we at in our 30s versus where are we at in our 40s? The self-understanding and that self-acceptance grows as we get older. So that's really natural. I actually was listening to like a little clip from Brené Brown, and I was like, oh my goodness. And she had said something like, you know, all of us have armor that we put up. You know, we have traumas in our life. We have these defense mechanisms, our armor, so we don't get hurt by the shit that bothers us. And I remember being in my 20s like, oh yeah, I got a little trauma, but it's fine. I'm good. I'm none of that bother. And then as I got older, I was like, I keep pushing it away, but it's not going away. It keeps popping up. And she said middle age between 40 and 60 is the point in people's lives where they realize the armor that they've put up and carried their whole lives not only no longer serves them, but is actually a disservice and has been holding them back from the things that they really want. And I was like, oh, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And for me, and the, you know, a lot of things in my life, but kink specifically, it was like, yeah, I had all of these inklings and these thoughts, and I thought I was weird or something was wrong with me. And I kept trying to shove it away, and it kept popping up. And I realized like, oh, time is ticking. My life is like half over soon. And I there's something here. There's something fulfilling here, and I'm going to pursue it. And I'm sure as hell glad I did. So anyone out there, yeah, anyone out there who has something that they're pushing down that they want to pursue, whether it's sexually or just life, you know, make this bigger picture, go for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I grew up in the Midwest. I used to push every. I was like, I'm fine. That's like the classic thing that, yeah. I was taught that. That was not to confront, just kind of absorb things, be nice, be one of the sheep that's being herded. And that did me a disservice for a long time. And I'm not 40 quite yet, but I do feel like a lot of that armor, and it was not okay to cry. It was it was a sign of weakness. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm crying. And then I realized, holy shit, wow, I'm releasing something when I'm shedding tears. Or holy shit, I can confront and do it in a way that is that doesn't have to feel like a terrible disagreement or an argument. And I think when it comes to pleasure and boundary setting and making sure it's the same thing, it's honoring yourself. It's honoring even the things that sometimes you don't want to, I don't want to be the person that is, I'm going to upset this person or my partner, or maybe it's your partner of a long, like 20 years that you didn't say specifically what your needs were, but there's always right now to wake up, whether and it's interesting that Brené Brown talks about it happening kind of like in the 40s. What'd you say? 40 to 60?
40 to 60,
yeah.
She said.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because I do feel like you slowly just kind of shift, and it's all conditioning that is
right.
It's changeable, and just like kink is customizable, you can customize your whole life to what you want it to be.
Well, I'll tie this back to kink, because this is the one reason I love kink, is because I always say that kink can be therapeutic. It is never therapy. And by saying that, I am not implying that when, you know, us kinksters do a scene, we're going into our deepest, darkest trauma and reenacting it. That's not what I'm saying. But we are all products of our trauma. Even saying, excuse me, to somebody in line at the grocery store. Every one of our actions, we are products of what happened before, right? So kink gives me and, you know, whoever, a safe container where I can be somebody different. And that can be for just purely recreation. But even in a recreational sense, I learn from that. So let's say, you know, I have always held myself back from being assertive. And this is actually my journey in kink. I started out submissive, and I am now consider myself dominant most of the time. And I do have an assertive personality that I've stuffed down because, you know, Midwest, I'm not supposed to do that. I'm a woman of color. I'm not supposed to do that. I'm a bitch if I'm assertive. So it gave me a chance to try on my assertive hat. And it felt really fucking weird because if I were to do this in real life, it would not be safe. But if I'm doing it dressed as a clown, electrocuting your toes, it's fun. It's safe because it's play. It's like erotic improv. And I get to try on different pieces and parts of myself that never get to come out and play. And sometimes, like I said, it's purely recreational. But sometimes those little pieces of myself that I got to know in my scenes, I take a little piece with me back out into the real world. Mm. And it helps me de-armor from those defense mechanisms or the ways that I've emotionally held myself back just in my life and through play. And I'm not saying, oh, only kink does that. Guess what? If you play Dungeons and Dragons, it does that. If you are in a weekly improv club, it does that. It's play. Play has a purpose. And this is just another way to do it.
I like that. And it, more play. So your book isn't out yet. 2022, it will be out. So the ETA we'll talk about that later because we don't have an ETA. No pressure. Sunny to finish exactly. The book. No pressure.
Sometime next year, which yes, might be December 31st.
Yeah. Yes, it will be happening. Yeah. But will you talk to our folks out there listening about what they can expect? The book's called Customizable Kink. We talked about a strategic guide to erotic play. Mm-hmm. What can they expect from that?
So it is all of the kink 101 from a strategic side. So it might not be like, this is exactly how you spank or this is exactly how you tie a knot, but it's, this is how you negotiate. This is how you establish consent, like all of those soft skills, but framed in a way that helps us think a little bit more critically from a big picture. Like, why is it hard when you're new and you go to research on the internet and everything that's supposed to be a reliable source is kind of bullshit. Why is this? Why is the kink community, you know, the different communities across the country and the world, some communities are wonderful and some communities have their issues. Why do they have their issues? Because if we're going to think critically about these things in order to customize them to our own experience, we have to understand the bigger picture as to why are these things happening? What are the larger, you know, undercurrents and very obvious things? So it's Kink 101 weaved through sort of kinky sociology and systems dynamics. And like I pull from weird sources. There's improv in there. There's neuroscience. Like it's probably, yes, definitely like nobody's ever seen before. It's not going to be a typical kink book, yeah. But it will tell you what you need to know.
Love that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're saying sometime in 2022. Mm-hmm. And so this will be so people, this is evergreen podcast. So you might be listening to this in 2025. It's out. And if you're listening right now, so whenever this is released and it's not out yet, where will people be able to buy it? And then also, how can they find you? How can they work with you? Do you work with clients one-on-one? You say you do clown play, things like that. And then also, you have a podcast that's been around. That's amazing. Tell our people how they can find and buy and do all the things with you.
Cool. So everywhere on social media, I'm Sunny Megatron, just S-U-N-N-Y, Megatron. And my website is sunnymegatron.com. So that's easy peasy. I have two podcasts, actually. American Sex Podcast, which drops weekly. And then also Open Deeply Podcast with licensed marriage and family therapist, Kate Lurie, that drops every 2 weeks. So those are the two. I would say follow me on social media because I teach a lot of classes online, usually for other people. I'm launching my own series that I'm hosting myself, teaching probably biweekly starting this fall. So, just follow me. It'll be everywhere. And the book, I haven't gotten as far as the nitty gritty of publishing, but I will expect it to be everywhere. You know, your Amazons, your, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
I can't wait. I love it. I love that you're taking all of the pieces. It's almost an encyclopedia of sorts, or something that's just deep diving, a workbook encyclopedia. But it's also going to have everything you need. It's a one-stop bookshop. And you're so knowledgeable. I mean, you have so many facets of knowledge. And I am dying to see you in your clown play situation now. I could picture it, and I have to go. I'm going to go and search for that, because I bet you're like the best.
Maybe you could pay Sunny to use a violet wand on your toes. Ooh. While Sunny's in a... and I could be there for it.
I could be there for it. Yeah. I will film them. I absolutely adore you, Sunny. Thank you. You're so good. You're just such a powerhouse, a badass human. So thank you.
Thank you
for sharing your amazing information with the Shameless Sex community here. And go check out both podcasts, please. And part of our network family, RTT, RTT Sunny.
Yes, I want to be a kinky TT now. I got to get that URL.
Yeah, go get kinky TT.
No one else take it.
And I don't want to go, but you know what? Before we go, I have to give a shout out to our wine sponsor because we love wine so much. We love grapes. They grow from the earth. They're lovely. You stomp on them and then you drink them when they ferment and they taste yummy. And sometimes you might get a buzz. So go to marginswine.com and check out why we love Margins wine so much. It's small batched boutique wine that only launches a few times a year. Megan Bell's a winemaker and she does a phenomenal job. And Amy and I have been huge fans for a long time. You can save some moolah. Just go to shamelesssex10 code. When you buy 3 or more bottles, you save 10%. If you use the code shamelesssex15, when you buy 6 or more bottles, you shall save 15%. That's my my little shout out to Megan Bell and marginswine.com there because I love her wine. I actually want a glass right meow because it's almost 5. It's just kidding. It's only 2 here.
That's 5.
But it's almost 5 somewhere.
Pretend you're in New York.
I know.
I'm in New York right
I'm
now.
I'm almost there. Yeah. And to all of you listening out there, please go on iTunes. I'm just inviting you, just give us a review on iTunes. It helps more people find folks like Sunny and their work out there. We have amazing guests and we just want our work to be shared with the world. And the more reviews we get, the more people can find us. So 5 stars are great. We read every single review and we love you so much.
Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com.
And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.